Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Michael J. Sheehan, the Archbishop of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Archbishop Sheehan will speak on the topic, Pastoring a Multicultural Church. His remarks were given as the second annual Distinguished Church Leader Lecture, sponsored by the Creighton Center for Catholic Thought, and co-sponsored by the Office of Multicultural Affairs. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday evening, October 26, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Creighton University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is John O'Keefe, the director of the Creighton University Center for Catholic Thought.
Our speaker this evening is the Most Reverend Michael J. Sheehan, the 11th Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Santa Fe in New Mexico. Archbishop Sheehan studied for the priesthood at St. John's Seminary and Assumption Seminary in San Antonio, Texas, and completed his priestly formation at the North American College in Rome. He did his theological studies at the Gregorian University, where he received his STL degree in 1965. In 1968, he returned to Rome for studies and received his doctorate in canon law from the Lateran University in 1971. Archbishop Sheehan was ordained a priest to the Diocese of Dallas-Fort Worth in Rome in 1964, and he was appointed associate pastor for Immaculate Conception Parish, which is now the Cathedral Parish in Tyler, Texas, and he served there from 1965 to 1968. From 1971 to 1976, he served as Assistant General Secretary for the National Conference of Catholic Bishops of the United States in Washington, D.C. In 1976, he was appointed rector of Holy Trinity Seminary in Dallas and served there until 1982, where he was named pastor of Immaculate Conception Parish in Grand Prairie, Texas. In 1983, Pope John Paul II established the Diocese of Lubbock and named Sheehan as its first bishop. He served as Bishop of Lubbock until 1993, when he was appointed Apostolic Administrator of the historic Archdiocese of Santa Fe, and he was appointed the 11th Archbishop of Santa Fe in 1993. Archbishop Sheehan has served on a variety of committees of the United States Catholic Conference, administrative, liturgical, evangelization, communications, Hispanic affairs, priestly life and ministry, to mention a few. He has also served on a variety of boards of directors, the Pontifical North American College, the Pontifical Josephinum Seminary, Catholic Mutual, Catholic Extension, Catholic Relief Services, Holy Trinity Seminary in Dallas, the Mexican-American Cultural Center, the United Way, Renew International. His bio says to name a few, but that seems like a lot. He has also served as Episcopal Moderator for the National Catholic Young Adult Ministry Association from 2002 to 2006. Today we are privileged to listen to Archbishop Sheehan discuss his experience as the chief pastor of the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is one of the most culturally diverse in the United States and includes long-established Hispanic families, Native American communities, as well as many Anglo newcomers. Please join me in welcoming Archbishop Sheehan as he speaks on this topic, Pastoring a Multicultural Church.
Thank you very much, Professor O'Keefe. I'm very happy to be here this evening and to visit Creighton University and to have this presentation on the pastoring of a multicultural church, which is our Archdiocese of Santa Fe. And as we come together, I'm reminded of a little story about a little girl in the fifth grade in public school, and she was talking to one of her teachers, who was a non-believer, and they were talking about whales. And the teacher was saying, well, you know, a whale is a huge mammal, but remember, it has a very narrow throat. So it'd be no way that, a whale could swallow a human being. And the little girl said, well, I'm a Catholic, and they teach us about the Bible and teach us religious education. And the other day, the teacher was talking about Jonah in the Old Testament that was swallowed by the whale. And the teacher, again, a non-believer, said, well, I'm not quite sure that that could really happen because, again, the narrow throat, you know. And the little girl said, well, I believe that the Bible is true and, you know, what we read in the Bible is true and that the church is teaching us the truth. But when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask Jonah about this. And the professor, again, a non-believer, said, well, what if Jonah didn't make it to heaven? What if he went to hell? And the little girl thought for a moment, and then she said, well, in that case, you can ask him. I guess she figured if he didn't believe in God, he was going to have a hard time getting through the pearly gates. But we know that God wants all of us to be saved. And that's why Jesus came and died on the cross for us, gave us our Catholic Church, which embraces all cultures, all language groups, all colors of skin. The church embraces all. And so we are here this evening then to talk about how I minister, how do I pastor as an archbishop to a multicultural church. Archbishop Patrick Flores, the retired Archbishop of San Antonio, who ordained me a bishop in 1983, tells of a busy Saturday of going to several meetings all around the city from place to place. And by the end of the day, he arrived at a church full of children, and he asked them, boys and girls, do you know who I am? And they answered, no. And he introduced himself to them and said, I'm Archbishop Flores. And then he asked them if they knew why he was there. And again, they said, no. And he pleaded with them, well, doesn't anybody know who I am and why I'm here? And finally, a little boy answered. He says, I know who you are, and I know why you're here. And the archbishop said, well, tell me, quick, why am I here? And he said, well, you're the archbishop, and you're here to take up a second collection. He said, well, we should ask ourselves, why are we here? You had the option of a movie. You had the option of the soccer game. And you're here this evening. And the answer is why we're here is to reflect on the multicultural reality of the Catholic Church in our country and to see how best we might minister to the different cultures which make up the Catholic faith. And I describe, of course, the situation in the local church of Santa Fe, but it could be any place in the country. There's another side too. Slide two. The church is Catholic, and it embraces all different cultures. It is not surprising that the Catholic bishops of the country in 2008 chose cultural diversity as one of our five major priorities for the church, the Catholic Church in the United States. I was the chairman of the committee of priorities and plans of the Bishops' Conference at that time, and so I made sure that this matter of cultural diversity was one of the most important priorities that we need to work on as leaders in the Catholic Church. The things that unite us, faith and charity, and love of Christ, the Eucharist, the Pope as successor of Peter, all these things are more powerful than the different cultures and languages that make up the church. But it is not a tug of war, us against them. How do we build up one another? Well, the bishop's document, The Stranger Among Us, Unity and Diversity, was issued in the year 2000, and we said the church in the 21st century will be, as it always has been, a church of many cultures, many languages, traditions, yet simultaneously one, as God is one, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, unity in diversity. One of the marks of the true church is that the church is Catholic. Remember, one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic, the four marks of the true church. This means that the church is indeed universal. It includes all cultures. Our Lord Jesus Christ came to save not just the Jewish people or the Greeks, but he came to serve everyone and to save them, all cultures, all languages, all colors of skin, all socioeconomic backgrounds. All are welcome in our Catholic Church. The presence of many cultures reminds us then of the universality of the Church and that mark of the Church, which is Catholic. And I'm sure some of you have been to St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Some of you perhaps. How many of you have been over to St. Peter's? Oh, pretty good number. Well, when you're there for a papal audience, you have thousands and thousands of people from all around the world, and the Pope addresses each language group in their own language, respecting their individuality. And the St. Peter's Square, Piazza San Pietro, that is in front of St. Peter's, the Bernini columns extend out in a huge space that embraces the St. Peter's Square. And the concept that he was wanting to get across, Bernini, the architect, was that the church welcomes all cultures. All the different nations are welcome. All the different peoples are to consider this their home. Now, in our own Archdiocese of Santa Fe, the Archdiocese is quite large. And as Archbishop there, I can tell you that it's about 50% Hispanic, and the Catholic population is about 50% as well. The Catholic population, then, very largely Hispanic. It's no surprise, but since we border on Mexico. Also, something that many people don't realize is that the Spanish Franciscans brought the Catholic faith to our area in 1598, over 400 years ago. The impact of the Spanish settlement continues to this day. We were, after all, part of the Spanish Empire for over 220 years. We're part of the Spanish Empire, that whole area of New Mexico. The largest river is the Rio Grande, the large river in Spanish. The mountains have Spanish names, Sangre de Cristo, the blood of Christ. It's not the same as your sangria that sometimes you drink. The San Juan Mountains, the mountains of St. John. The capital city is Santa Fe, the city of Holy Faith. And many of the traditions of the New Mexico culture are rooted in those years in which we were a part of Spain. And even the Native American communities, the Indian communities, which we call Pueblos, have much of their culture drawn from the Spanish. In fact, the Indians will say, we keep the Spanish traditions better than the Hispanics do themselves. The area that is now the state of New Mexico became a part of the United States after the U.S.-Mexico War in 1846. And until that time, the churches of New Mexico were part of the Diocese of Durango, Mexico, a long way from Durango all the way up to Santa Fe, but we were part of that diocese. And when New Mexico was separated from Mexico and became part of the United States, the Vatican wisely created a new diocese when that area became separated from Mexico and part of the U.S. And instead of choosing an Hispanic or an American bishop for the area to be the new bishop, a Frenchman was chosen, Bishop Jean-Baptiste Lamy, who is somewhat famous from Willa Cather's book, Death Comes to the Archbishop, and other books that have been written about him. It was a wise awareness on the part of the Vatican of the cultural differences, even in 1850, when the decision of the Vatican was made. Because Lamy was a missionary priest from France who had been working as a missionary priest in the Midwest of the United States, so he could be seen as neither a Mexican or an American. And so there was already a cultural sensitivity at work on the part of the Vatican back in 1850. In addition to the Hispanic and Anglo populations, the Archdiocese, as I mentioned, has a good number of Native Americans, 50,000, and Native American Catholic leaders from the Pueblo, the village, the reservation of Sandia, which is just north of Albuquerque, and it's the Kateri Circle. You know who Kateri Tecahuitha was? She was an Indian young woman who has been beatified in the church, and we look forward to her being canonized as soon as that can be worked out. So we have in each of these Native American communities, the Pueblos, we have what was called a Kateri Tecahuitha Circle, and that's a prayer group that seeks to imitate the virtues of this Indian girl who was famous for her holiness and her faith and humility. Of course, the Native Americans have their own language. They have their own culture. And their history, of course, they are the original inhabitants and were converted to the Catholic faith by the Franciscan missionaries who came in 1598. So we have a very significant Native American community in addition to the huge number of Hispanics. Then we have a significant number of Vietnamese. There is Our Lady of Lavang, the Vietnamese national parish, where the Vietnamese language is spoken in the liturgy. The whole Mass is in Vietnamese. When I go to have the Mass there, they have someone translating my homily from English into Vietnamese. And there's another parish, too, where they have a Vietnamese liturgy in Albuquerque. We have a number of African Americans. In fact, I have a Mass for them this Sunday in Albuquerque, a Native African American group, and they have their own unique culture to be concerned with. We have other cultures represented as well, including the Filipino community and others as well, Eastern Rite churches too. Bishop Ricardo Ramirez, the Bishop of Las Cruces, is specialized in multicultural ministry, and I draw upon some of his wisdom in this presentation. He notes that while assimilation takes place, it doesn't happen all at once. The process is not simple. In the case of many Mexicans coming to the United States, there may have been more of a tendency to hold on to their Mexican cultural heritage, a natural thing. From the pastoral point of view, it is hoped that they also hold on to their Catholic cultural heritage in particular, because there are other religions that are trying to convert them and take them away from the Catholic faith. Some of these will be evangelical, who will be very aggressive in trying to recruit the Hispanic newly arrived. The U.S. is, after all, not only multicultural, but multi-religious. The U.S. culture itself has its problems. We are consumeristic and materialistic. We tend to measure success by how much we earn or by how many things that we possess. Our U.S. culture is cynical about truth and about the different forms of authority. The dark side of our present U.S. culture is the negative attitude towards people of color, towards the poor, towards the new immigrant. In ministering to a multicultural church, we certainly don't want to see our immigrants, no matter what culture they come from, adopt the negative aspects of American culture. Now, where parishes find themselves, we must be ready to welcome newcomers no matter what culture they come from. There's no room for racism or for prejudice among our parishioners or among our parish leaders. Bishop Ramirez suggests that there are three levels where parishes may presently find themselves. And the first one is a racial and cultural difference seen as a defect or a problem. And this, thank God, is mostly in the past, I think. Certainly, in the Deep South, there were strong racist attitudes on the part of many whites towards blacks. I grew up in Texarkana, Texas, which had basically a southern culture. It's on the border of Arkansas and Texas. And in the 1950s, when I was in high school, it was clear that there was strong prejudice against blacks. Even in public buildings, the courthouse and the city hall and so forth, the whites could have water from the water cooler. The blacks were supposed to drink regular tap water, and there were signs indicating this. There was a white ladies' restroom and a colored women's restroom. The word lady was not used in reference to African Americans. And of course, blacks were required to sit in the back of the bus. It's not just something you read about. I experienced that culture growing up. Very clear that racial differences were seen as a defect, a problem. And thank God that we have given up visible signs of those clearly unacceptable signs of racial intolerance. It's true that many Catholics, particularly in Louisiana, turned Protestant after they saw Catholic priests and nuns walking with those advocating civil rights for African Americans. Thank God we have moved beyond racial intolerance, but there might still be unspoken and unwritten practices in parishes dealing with people from other cultures. That's looking at parishes where the differences were seen as defects, mostly, hopefully, all in the past. And secondly, tolerance of racial and cultural differences. This is a much better level, still not perfect. At this level, official policies may be announced regarding the acceptance of multicultural diversity in a parish. The consciousness of white power and privilege may also be present, but their efforts of recruiting people of color, for parish staff and for committees. Yet there may still be some level of hesitation about other cultures. So this level represents tolerance, which is a lot better than hostility. And the third level that we see in parishes, and the one that we hope will be prevailing in every parish in our diocese and elsewhere in the country, racial and cultural differences seen as assets. This is a level of welcoming and acceptance that we should be aiming at in our parishes. This means a concerted effort at eradicating social sin of any racial bias and truly accepting people from other places. My Hispanic ministry director, Deacon Juan Barajas, emphasizes again and again that the church should embody the concept of mi casa es su casa, my house is your house. Recently, in the Archdiocese, we have accepted a number of priests from African countries, Nigeria and Uganda. And I know the bishops of the two dioceses from which these men come. There is no more dramatic way to be united, to be reminded of the universality of the church, than to have a priest from Nigeria serving the spiritual needs of our people. I have been very pleased that these priests have been accepted with love and gratitude. And certainly these priests minister very well to their people. I was, frankly, a little nervous wondering when I sent the African priest to Tucumcari, which is kind of a small town kind of towards the Texas border. And I wasn't just sure how the people would accept an African priest. Well, they've accepted him very well. He has worked hard to overcome the natural accent that he has. He's easily, I think, fairly easily understood by the people, and they see this priest as truly as an asset, not as a problem. Then practical ways of ministering in a multicultural situation. The Vatican Council, in the document on the liturgy, Sacrosanctum Concilium, paragraph 37, speaks of the importance of the liturgy taking into consideration different cultures and different traditions of the people. And so the language of the people, the music that is used, the artistic traditions of different groups, all those are important. And this is from the Vatican Council document. All must be done, of course, in accord with church norms, the Episcopal Conference of the country, and with the approval of the Holy See. We seek to minister in our multicultural archdiocese in accord with those basic principles. Other church documents also urge these principles, always keeping the basic unity required in the church. So from the highest level then of the Vatican and the Vatican Council, the bishops of the world, emphasizing the importance of respecting the cultures and letting that respect enter into the liturgy as well. Masses and homilies. In the archdiocese, there are 92 parishes, and about half or perhaps more than half have a Spanish or bilingual mass to accommodate the Hispanics. You might ask how the issue of languages is handled. It depends on the size of the parish, the particular needs of the parish, but most of our Hispanic people speak both English and Spanish. There are a number of parishes, though, that have a large number of recent immigrants that require a Spanish Mass with the homily in Spanish also. And parents and grandparents might not know any English, but that speak only Spanish. The children, of course, because they go to school in New Mexico, would be bilingual, but would speak English as well as Spanish, sometimes English better than their Spanish. We are blessed to have a good number of bilingual deacons that assist the priest in providing for a Mass completely in Spanish by giving the homily in Spanish. And it's a challenge, though, to have enough priests who are sufficiently bilingual to not only celebrate the Mass in Spanish, but also to preach. So those deacons, Deacon Luna, are very valuable to us. The music is also in Spanish. Many parishes have a bilingual Mass, which is partially in English and partially in Spanish, with music also being bilingual. The pastor tries to have a prudent arrangement of English and Spanish Masses in his parish with a significant number of Hispanics. All of our seminarians, and we have 28 seminarians now, I think all the seminarians are required to learn Spanish. They study Spanish not only at the seminary, but also we send them to Mexico, we send them to Spain, and some to the Mexican-American center, cultural center in San Antonio called MAC. They study Spanish not only there, but also on their own. And the priests are given the opportunity to study Spanish as well, if they don't know it already. It's very important for our clergy to be connected through the language to our Hispanic community. An example of a multicultural liturgy would be our annual Mass and Rosary rally honoring the Blessed Virgin that draws about 6,000 people on a Sunday in October. It is held at the Isotopes Baseball Stadium. The Mass and Rosary are bilingual, as well as the music. And this year, the Vietnamese young people, dressed in their traditional garb from Vietnam, gave a dance on the ball field in honoring the image of the Blessed Virgin that we had. And that image, of course, was crowned as part of the ceremony, the crowning of the Blessed Mother. This way, we're recognizing not only as the Hispanic and Anglo cultures, but the Vietnamese culture there as well. And other occasions, we have the Native American culture represented too. And then traditions. Efforts are made with regard to liturgy to incorporate aspects of Hispanic culture into the Mass in ways that are acceptable to the liturgical norms. So, for example, in Mexico, a wedding oftentimes includes a lasso or a large rosary placed over the two newlyweds as they kneel in church, showing their unity. And so we do that in many of our Mexican weddings in the archdiocese. We use the lasso. When we celebrate Mass for the Native Americans, we often use the smoke that is traditional to Native American culture instead of the regular incense. And we have 16 Indian villages, which we call pueblos, of the Pueblo Indians in New Mexico, and efforts are made to respect other aspects of their Catholic tradition, such as the music that is prepared by Native American musicians. They use the drums and various forms of music for their liturgies. And as I mentioned before, they have the buffalo dance. There's also the eagle dance, the deer dance, to bless the sacred space prior to the liturgical procession of a Mass. And then with regard to evangelization, our recent popes, certainly John Paul II, Pope Paul VI before him, and Benedict XVI, they have all emphasized the importance of the new evangelization and to look for creative ways of seeking inactive Catholics and unchurched people. So in the Archdiocese, we have an active evangelization committee that meets regularly and an office of evangelization to carry on the work of the new evangelization. And there we have a mixture of different people involved in the ministries of evangelization. And we have become aware of the need to do more in terms of evangelizing Native Americans, as participation at Mass has fallen off and many young people in the reservations are not trained adequately in the faith. So recently I appointed a new coordinator of Native American ministry. He is a deacon and a Native American himself. He has recently been leading, having meetings of Catholics in the different reservations or pueblos to see what could be done to help them become stronger in the faith, especially the young people. And as a result of these meetings, we're hiring two Native American catechists that will help build up the catechetical effort in the pueblos, and two other part-time Native American youth ministers to be hired to promote the faith among the young people of our pueblos. As I said, I estimate that we have about 50,000 Catholic Native Americans, and I think that these efforts of evangelization will bear fruit. It's essential to identify and train lay leaders in the different cultures represented. We can't be satisfied with the involvement of newcomers in liturgical ministry. They need formation. There are other urgent needs, too. Catechists need to be trained, especially those who have the advantage of being bilingual. We're working at that all the time. Children and youth may understand and communicate well in English, but their parents may not. So catechists must assist the parents to be the first teachers of the faith for their people, for their children. The Archdiocesan website, it's a very active website. It's a valuable way to reach young people and to evangelize. And then with regard to music, a little bit more about music. Since Vatican II, we have been blessed with a variety of forms of vernacular music, music in English. We began with such things as Kumbaya, and Michael rowed the boat ashore. And then we took what was the fad at the time, I'm afraid, the music of Hootenanny and folk music in those first years of liturgical reform. Thank God we've moved beyond those kinds of trivial forms of music to better music. What we need in ministry in a multicultural church then is music that is appropriate for the different cultural groups. Usually the challenge is met by having separate masses for each group. We schedule a Spanish mass or an English mass in bilingual parishes with appropriate music. In our Vietnamese parish, the music is always in Vietnamese. But many times we seek to have a bilingual or multicultural music that encompasses all the cultures. And thanks to contemporary composers, several from my own archdiocese, we have at our disposal some very fine bi- and multilingual music. Although each language group might have its own mass, there are times when we should seek to have it bilingual or trilingual. And so on special feast days in our Cathedral Basilica of San Francisco de Assis in Santa Fe incorporates English and Spanish and Native American languages and music with appropriate worship aids to help those that might not know the particular language being used. And certainly it's important also to keep in mind that we can use Latin, we can use a Gregorian chant for the Holy, 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 the Lamb of God, and other parts, which is a common means of worship for our multicultural groups. It is, after all, part of our tradition as Catholics, and the Holy See, the Vatican has encouraged a greater use of Gregorian chant and other traditional music. And then an important thing that we listen. It seems very important to me that the people from different cultures listen to each other and hear the stories that need to be told. Listening is the greatest gift that we can give to each other in terms of communication, to listen, to find out what's on the other person's mind. There needs to be thoughtfulness on the part of, say, liturgical committees of the parishes and of the dioceses to find out what people would like to have in terms of liturgical celebration. Of course, that means having different cultural groups represented on the liturgy committees. It means not only different cultural groups in terms of language, but also of age and special interests. Young people, teenagers, young adults, college students should be able to have a voice in the arrangement and planning of liturgy. Older people have something to say as well, as single and married couples. The interests and commitments of all the different groups need to be listened to. It's important to respect the popular religiosity of different cultures that are represented in the archdiocese. For example, the devotion to Our Lady Guadalupe, very important part of the spirituality of those of Mexican origin. Years ago, the Anglo Church didn't pay much attention to the devotion to Our Lady Guadalupe. Now, of course, it's a very large part of the devotion to the Blessed Virgin that we have in the Southwest, and I think probably here in Omaha as well. The pastors must be ready to celebrate on the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe at the traditional times which the Hispanics would like to have their Mass at the vigil honoring Our Lady. Sometimes those traditions involve a sleep depreciation, and getting up for the 6 a.m. Mass to honor the Blessed Mother. That's what I'm saying. Sleep deprivation is what I wanted to say. The Vietnamese have a great devotion to Our Lady of Lavang, which is a Vietnamese saint, a Vietnamese devotion to Our Blessed Virgin, and that should be respected. Other cultural groups have aspects of popular religiosity, and their traditions should be respected as well. Then the immigrants, welcoming the immigrants. Much should be done regarding respect given to immigrants, whether they're documented or whether they're not documented, whether they're legal or illegal. We have in the Archdiocese of Santa Fe families who are descended from the original settlers who came in 1598. Many other families have entered our state from Mexico through the years. And then there are the more recent arrivals that sometimes are not respected by the older people who originally came from Mexico. It's funny how you can have people coming from a country and the ones who got here first kind of look down on the ones who got here more recently. It's the same thing with the Italians and other groups that have come in the East. well, in our area, it's people coming in more recently from Mexico aren't particularly respected by the older people who have come from Mexico, perhaps a generation before. But we must respect our immigrants. Without approving of violations of immigration law, we're committed to serving immigrant people from Mexico and other countries because they're children of God. They're part of the faith. And so we should indeed be welcoming to immigrants. We're sometimes heavily criticized that we are reaching out to those who are undocumented. But as a church, they are welcome, no matter what their immigration status. However they got here, we don't know. But they're here, and they have to be honored and loved and welcomed and made a part of our church. One great concern that I have, not only for immigrants, but for other people who have been away from the church, is that they be welcomed. When someone comes to the parish office to arrange a baptism or a wedding or a funeral, and they're not registered in the parish, oftentimes they're simply turned down. It's kind of a scandal. It is not the custom in Mexico to register in parishes. And so they're not accustomed to doing it there. They're many times not accustomed to doing it here, not used to it. The parish office should be very careful to welcome even nominal Catholics and to bend over backwards to instruct them and help them so that their family can indeed receive the sacraments. They can have the funeral, can have the wedding, can have the baptism. There are many stories of people, as I say, being turned away because of the harshness that they experience when approaching a parish office. There are ways to respect the norms of the church and at the same time welcome the stranger. In closing, all of us, regardless of our cultural backgrounds, must realize that our beautiful Catholic Church has profound attraction in terms of spiritual food for those who have found secular lifestyle unsatisfying and unfulfilling. I believe that the richness of our Catholic heritage is the most complete, compassionate witness of Jesus Christ possible. Our faith not only guides us and helps us in this life, but leads us to the joy of life eternal. We must have a love, a compassion for our Catholic faith, a burning desire to share it with all people, regardless of their cultural background. And finally, I believe that we must foster great zeal for the salvation of souls. It may sound old-fashioned, but God has called us to serve as instruments to help people get to heaven. That's where I became a priest. We must see that our Holy Catholic Church invites us to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ that will nurture us here on earth and lead us to the eternal happiness of heaven. We ask the Lord to help us that we might trust in Him as we seek to serve the multicultural groups that we have within our faith. It is important to remember that despite the challenges of a multicultural church we face, Jesus promised to be with His church forever until the end of time. May God give us the great energy and creativity that we need in bringing the new evangelization to all cultures that we are privileged to embrace. I want to thank you for your kind attention and your presence here this evening. Thank you.
We have some time for questions, and if you just raise your hand, I'll bring the mic to you.
I am struck, as I've been doing a lot of reading in recent months on this new evangelization thrust from Rome. And it seems to me that a huge part of that is really helping catechists and so forth understand the electronic media, the use of the computer and other resources. Is that, I mean, I don't want to sound old and fuddy-duddy, but is that what the strike of the new is? Because I mean, evangelization is ultimately making Jesus available to the world in a meaningful way.
Well, surely that would be one way to take advantage of the new means of communication, and of course the internet, Twitter, and Facebook, and the different ways in which most of the youth culture, that's their connection. And of course, more and more newspapers are being abandoned by many people, and they get their information through the internet. And we have to be very strong in utilizing the internet for the new evangelization. But the new evangelization isn't just the new ways in which we can communicate with the internet and so forth, and the iPads and the iPhones and all that. It's the bringing the evangelization into the areas where it is particularly needed today, like new ways to do that. And that would be one way, but there are many other ways in which I think we can use for the new evangelization as well. In my own archdiocese, we have a lot of people that are married but not in the church, are living together and not married in any which way. And so what we've been doing lately is to have a big ad in the papers and get the word around every way we can. Three lines, kind of large print. Are you Catholic? Next line, are you married? The next line, are you married in the Catholic Church? If not, call this number. And we get hundreds of phone calls from people, and we have a team of deacons that work with those people who call to help them to get their marriage plans made. And then Valentine's Day, or a day near Valentine's Day, we have 150 weddings. And not all in one thing, because you can't get everybody in one church if you have 150 couples get married. But you know, a simpler, and we emphasize it doesn't have to cost anything. You know, you're not having to have a big reception and a huge band and all that. And we would take about 30 couples, and we would have, say, five different celebrations in different parishes to accommodate those folks. And that's like returning an entire parish to the practice of the faith to get to the sacraments again. And you have couples that have been cohabiting. You have couples that were married but outside the church. That's couples who are young, couples who are old. And just one couple that I remember, this is a way of evangelizing, kind of new, different way. It's not just a, you know, an inquiry class at the, you know, in the basement of the church every Wednesday night or something. And there was a couple that I had in one of the marriages that was up in years, maybe in their 70s. I'm 72. They were so happy to have their marriage blessed in the church and to go back to the sacraments. And the man had, he and his wife were at home, I guess, and he had a heart attack. And as he was laying on the floor dying, he said, "Martha, thank God the Archbishop blessed our marriage. We're in the state of grace. If I die, I can go to heaven." I mean, that kind of powerful sort of witness. So there are different ways in which the traditional evangelization can be brought to the more modern situation in which we live. And we've initiated a series of television ads about the church, ads that appear on the side of buses, and every parish in the archdiocese is given a couple of new posters or like billboards that can be put up in the church or outside of the church or on the road coming into the town if it's a small community. There's all different ways we can get the word out, which would be a part of what the popes call the new evangelization. Yeah, other questions? Yes, Father.
Speaking of marriage, I've heard so many stories about families which are ripped apart because of the immigration enforcement. More than anything else, really like to hear the church pushing for comprehensive immigration reform about the protection of families.
Of course, it seems like Congress can't agree on anything right now. So we've pushed for comprehensive immigration reform, the bishops of the country. We have taken in New Mexico a strong stand for immigrant rights, and we go to the state legislature. It's called the Roundhouse because the state legislature is around there, and we go to the Roundhouse to speak in favor of laws that will be favorable towards the native towards the immigrant people. We've been blasted for it. We just recently have had a big fight in the state of New Mexico about license plates. Not license plates, but driver's licenses for immigrants who, whether even those who don't have, they're not here legally. And a couple of years ago, we got a law through that allowed undocumented people that can prove that they live there in New Mexico to get a driver's license. And there have been a few abuses of that by bad guys from other countries trying to get in to get a legal driver's license in New Mexico. And so there have been some people complaining. And the new governor, Susana Martinez, who's Hispanic, but her family has been here for a while, and she's opposed to this law and trying to get rid of it. And we've stood up against her saying, no, our country, our city, and our roads, they're safer if people who are going to drive have passed a driver's test and they get insurance and they're in the system, so that if they need to be found for any reason, they're in the system. And so we've had a very strong commitment, the bishops of the state, in favor of retaining the driver's license for the undocumented. We have been kind of, some people don't agree with us, but we think that's where we need to be, supporting the immigrant people. And there's other laws that we have been very visible in supporting, laws that are going to be fair for immigrant people and for the poor. And also, 3 years ago, the bishops of the state were very instrumental in getting the abolition of the death penalty, a law wiping out the death penalty for New Mexico. Yes.
Archbishop, thank you. My name is Jay Carney. I teach here at Creighton.
Yes.
And my anecdotal experience is a lot of times parishes will have a strong Hispanic community, strong Anglo community, but everybody has their own mass, and they even have their own traditions, and in a sense, never the twain shall meet. And I'm wondering, in your archdiocese, what have you done in a way to bring the parish together within a community so that it's not just a kind of tribalized Spanish mass, English mass, but that the whole church, in a way, is celebrating as one community?
Yeah, thank you. I did address it a little bit in the paper, but we would encourage bilingual, bicultural liturgies in the parishes as well as in our cathedral, and we have those regularly. So we try to adjust the mass schedule so that maybe some of the people do want to just have the Spanish mass, and some Anglos want to just have the English mass. But we always blend in addition to those bilingual, bicultural masses where we bring the Hispanic and the Anglo communities together, using the music, using the language, and with worship aids that have both, the translation of whatever is being done, so that in English or in Spanish, the words will be available and the people will understand. So we make a very strong, concerted effort at bilingual liturgies and bilingual masses. And the parish liturgy committee in our parishes, where they really are doing what's right, they look for ways to bring the two communities together, so that there is a unity of the parish. But there's always going to be some that will prefer just simply the English or the Spanish. But we work at it with the bilingual liturgies, and I think pretty successfully too. Yeah, it's something you have to work at, and there has to be the liturgy committee has to be committed to it, and the pastor and his leadership have to be committed to not just having the totally everything separate. Yeah, it has to be intentional. That word intentional, where you want this to happen and you work at it to bring the two groups together in every creative way possible. Yeah, yeah, yes.
I was curious about your comment about evangelical evangelization. In other words, kind of a rival voice within the Christian community that challenges in some ways the traditional Catholic voice. And I just wonder what you think the attraction is. What is it that the church doesn't seem to have that other communities can challenge it and bring people together in a different voice?
Okay, yeah. The impact of the evangelical, what do the Hispanics see in the evangelical? Because they're not going to have the Blessed Virgin, not going to have Our Lady Guadalupe, they're not going to have the priest, not going to have the sister. They give up many of the very powerful traditional things of Catholicism. But I think what is attractive is that they're drawn by the charismatic side of the evangelical preaching that's charismatic and very vivacious kind of thing. And also the focus on the person of Jesus, the personal relationship to Jesus, that maybe they didn't have a sense of that in the Catholic Church, or maybe the sermons weren't as evangelically, charismatically preached, and some of them would be tempted to go towards leave the Catholic religion and go towards the evangelicals because of that. But in doing so, they lose the devotion to Our Lady Guadalupe. They lose the Mass. They lose the traditions of Catholicism that were so dear and precious to them. And many of them, after they've spent time in the evangelical churches, they come back, you know, and they want to be back in the Catholic faith. And the Rosary and so many of the traditions that they love draw them back to the Catholic faith. But there is an issue that we have to work hard to keep. And then, you know, sometimes our Catholic church parishes are huge, and they have this little evangelical evangelical Hispanic church that's small, and they can know everybody, and maybe the minister is a Hispanic guy that is from their culture also, and make them feel at home and make them feel welcome, and they might get lost in the big Catholic parish of Anglo people. So those would be things that would attract them, that we have to be conscious of making them feel at home, yeah, and having powerful, good liturgies, and talking about the personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Well, thank you again, Archbishop, for joining us, and let's give one more round.
You've been listening to a lecture from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Michael J. Sheehan, the Archbishop of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Archbishop Sheehan spoke on the topic, Pastoring a Multicultural Church. His remarks were given as the second annual Distinguished Church Leader Lecture, sponsored by the Creighton Center for Catholic Thought, and co-sponsored by the Office of Multicultural Affairs. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday evening, October 26, 2011, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Cindy Workman, Associate Director of Public Relations at Creighton University, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.